Hello, and welcome to the Just a Dog Trainer podcast, where we talk about everything under the sun, but with a dog trainer's unique point of view, namely mine. I'm Laurie C. Williams, aka the Canine Diva, and I've been a dog training professional for over 35 years, not only training dogs, but also helping them and their humans establish a strong bond and a partnership as they travel through this journey called life. Come along with us. Hey, everybody. It's the Canine Diva with another episode of Just a Dog Trainer podcast. Now, today I wanted to talk about 10 ways how dogs are basically superior to humans when it comes to relationships. All right. Now, this is not to say that, like, oh, dogs are better than humans and you should have, you know, who cares about having human relationships when you have a dog? Yes and no. No, more so what I mean is dogs teach us so much. There's so many lessons that we can learn by how dogs behave and what dogs bring to relationships, that if we adopted those in our human-to-human relationships, we'd have much better relationships ourselves, okay? So let's get into it. Just a little brief history of the domesticated dog. How did that happen? So there are various different theories. Certainly a derivative of some type of primitive dog-like, wolf-like animal that when we were going through the evolutionary changes that we went through, we either alongside of or welcomed those animals in to our sphere. I'm suspecting that they probably took more of the lead in this, in that they saw we had food. We had something they needed. We had also warmth. Particularly when we were able to create fire and warmth, they saw, wow, whatever this being is, they have food, they have warmth. Maybe I should stick kind of close. Now, more than likely, those early primitive wolf-like, canine-like beings were very suspicious of humans. And, you know, we see that pop up in dogs today. The dogs that are a little skittish and like, you know, don't want to really get too close to humans. Well, that's a derivative of that, just so you know, because wolves are like that. Wolves are not trying to be all up in our business, okay? So, you know, they did not want to be around us, but then there were certain ones that said, you know what, hey, this might be a good gig over here with these creatures, whatever they are. Because, again, like I said, they had food, they had warmth. Maybe we should stick kind of close. So when those more friendly type canids were sticking kind of close and they made it and bred and had more, they also, their offspring also were more of the type that, let's stick kind of close over to here, okay? So that's, hence that, it was the beginning of the domestication of canines. Of course, there was a lot more to it. They had to be probably lured with food, right? Shown how to hunt and hunted alongside us. And learned how to live close by man, okay? So that's the beginning of the relationship. And it probably remained as such for, you know, centuries, more than likely. But then, somewhere along the way, it shifted from not only a working relationship, but it shifted to more of a, or simultaneously a companion type relationship as well. So more than likely, again, it was probably the human on that end who said, you know what? I kind of like this. I don't feel so alone when this animal is with me. I don't feel as alone. And this animal likes to kind of come closer to me when, and maybe the animal was doing it again just for the warmth of the fire. Who knows? But that closeness was something that more than likely the human really liked. And then the animal started to like it as well because they saw that they got more stuff the closer they were. So the relationship was evolved right alongside of the animal evolving and the human evolving as beings. And it grew until, in the 19th century, really, actually, even in the 18th century, 16th even, because you can see it in old cave drawings and even paintings from back then. You see the different dogs, wild dogs, early domesticated dogs, very, very close to humans and actually working alongside them. I know there are Egyptian hieroglyphics that show the Egyptian like dogs, the Anubis like dogs, something similar to like Salukis, greyhounds, pharaoh hounds. You see those sight hound shaped dogs actually hunting on the hieroglyphics. So that's how far back this goes, you guys. So it evolved to a companionship and a working relationship. It was both. So as time went on, very much the people that lived in the rural and the country on the farms and that it stayed a lot of working relationship. Working was probably here, companionship was here. But once we got into the cities, we brought dogs with us. Dogs were perfectly fine having a nomadic life like we did, as I said, going from when we would travel as nomads through the various different through the world, actually. But then when we started settling in villages and then later towns and cities, the dogs came with us. They came with us. And we're primarily companions at that point because we weren't living on farms. It wasn't a lot of work for dogs to do. They were just companions. They were in our homes. And hence, that's what they've been ever since. Even those of us who, I always get a little giggle when I see people on social media talking about their working dog. Very few people have working dogs. The dogs that work in the military and law enforcement or on working farms, okay. But the vast majority of dogs, particularly those that live in the United States, are, I don't care if they come from a working breed of dog, they are not working dogs. They are dogs with working capabilities, and it behooves you to find some type of simulation of work and training that you can provide for them, because then they'll just be a much better dog. But yeah, they're not a working dog. So suffice to say, they're our companions, regardless of to the breed, regardless to the breed. They are our companions. So if you stack up as a companion, how are dogs superior to the human companion? Or are they? Let's take a look. So, number one, dogs are loyal. And loyal to the end. Think about this. A dog never betrays you intentionally, at least. No, you know what? I take that back. They never betray you, period. There may be things that we might look at as a betrayal, but that's our problem, and I'll get to that in a minute. That's the way we're looking at it, by attaching human characteristics to this being that is not human. And that's what gets us into trouble. But they are loyal. They will not betray you. They are exactly who they are, and you know who they are. They don't change. Now, when I say loyal, I mean loyal. They are your ride or die. They are not leaving you. And I don't care what happens. And they will not betray you. They will not go, they will not leave their person for another person. Period. Now listen, some of you guys are going to jump in my comments and go, no, my dog will do go off with such and such, such and such, such and such, such and such. Well, then you're not their person. I hate to tell you. You know, I don't know how to put it any plainer. When you are that dog's person, they are loyal to you to the end. They do not leave you. The only time they leave you, it's sorry to say when they pass away. That and then they don't even want to do it. This is why so many dogs, I get choked up a lot when I think about the beauty of dogs. Dogs hang on. Even at the end, they don't want to leave us. You guys know it. Any of you guys who have lost a very sick dog, an elderly dog who you've had for years, they hold on until the end, and they don't want to go. You usually have to make the decision to help them along because they stay. They stay, despite it being not the thing that they should be doing. They stay for us. That is loyalty. Loyalty like no other. Okay? So, dogs are loyal. Period, point blank. They don't betray you. They don't leave you until they have to leave you, and it's no longer a choice anymore. Number two, dogs are adaptable and they are open to change. Now, this is not to say that you do not have to struggle with certain changes for them, but I'm going to tell you, changing the environment, the routine, the lifestyle for a dog is so much easier than for a human. Now, dogs might balk at it in the very, very beginning, but not really, because dogs just accept change. If you think about it, their lives are uprooted and changed so much. Like, think about a rescue dog. So those of you who have ever rescued a dog, very often that dog, you might be that dog's second, third, or fourth home. I've done foster care. I've fostered dogs that are in rescue where I was like their fifth home. They just go from home to home. And then you look at them and yeah, they do carry a little bit of trauma with them sometimes, but generally they roll with the punches. Okay, this is where I'm being fed now. This is where I'm getting my shelter now. And they roll with it. Much easier than humans. Humans agonize over every little change. Come on, we do. Every little thing. Because we think about it and we speculate and we contemplate and we just agonize over every little thing. So yeah, dogs are much more adaptable and adaptable within a relationship. Hey, we're doing this now. We're living here now. We're living like this now. We're living on the beach now. Dogs would love that. We're living in a high-rise apartment now. Come on. This is where we live. Big yard, no yard. From a big yard to a no yard. Dogs deal with it. All right. Dogs are always happy to see us. Period. They wait at the window for us to come home. They are always happy. You know, even when their physical body is not, you know, again, look at old senior dogs. They will still get off the couch and walk over to you and try their best to wiggle, wiggle, wiggle or whatever. They're always happy to see us. Can't really say that about human partners. I mean, you're lucky. Hey, how was your day? You might get a grunt here and there. I think what it is that dogs don't take the relationship for granted. They don't take it for granted. When they see us and every new day that they see us, even when they wake up in the morning, hi, they're so happy to see us. Which is one of the reasons we love them so much. You know, that's such a welcoming. You know, just think if your kids did that every time they saw you. You know, they do it when they're young. You know, when they're you know, babies and toddlers, probably up until, and they do it sometimes in the early elementary school. But I'm going to say somewhere around fourth, fifth grade, they stop being so thrilled with seeing their parents. You pick them up for school, they barely want to tell you how their day was, okay? They take, and all that is taking a relationship for granted. In the beginning of a marriage, same thing. Oh, hi, honey. Oh, blah, 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 blah. You know, you're first courting and all that. And then after you've been together for a while, it's like, hey, what's up? I mean, you know, and I get it. I get it. I get it. We there's no sense of urgency. But dogs always seem to have a sense of urgency to like, let us know how much they, like, don't ever leave me again. That was so hard to be without you. Dogs are going to tell us that every time. Every time. Like, ooh. Who doesn't like that, right? That's just great. Number four, dogs are non-materialistic. You know, let me tell you something. Let me give you a clue here. All the stuff that you buy your dog beyond their food, their vet care, all that stuff that you buy, the collars, the leashes, the bejeweled collars, is bejeweling still a thing? I don't even know. You know what I mean. The studded, that's the thing now, the studded collars and chain, gold chains and the leather leashes with embellishments and beads on it and the beds, the dog beds that are like, have their name embroidered on them and all that. And the dishes that have their names on them and it, all that stuff. Dogs couldn't care less. If you put their food on a paper plate, not even a paper plate, you took a piece of paper and put their food on it, they couldn't care less. They'd eat it off that piece of paper as much as they'd eat it out of that fancy dish that you bought. Dogs don't want to wear collars and they hate leashes anyway. So do you think they care about the expensive leash and collar that you bought? No, they do not. The last I checked, the pet product and service industry is about a $60 billion industry. That's a lot, right? Well, let me tell you something. All those products are geared towards the human. Yeah, they're geared towards you. They are things that are marketed and geared toward you to make you buy them for your dog. Your dog couldn't care less. All those fancy toys that you buy, and you buy them often, I'm sure. Hey, I do it. No judgment. No shade here. No judgment. We do it because we feel we need to buy a dog's toys. You know, every toy your dog has, you could make a toy. You could make it, and your dog would like it just as much. We have a feed stores and stuff like that. I don't want to mention any brand names because one of the chains I'm mad at right now, so I'm not going to mention them. But you know, feed stores, home goods stores, stuff like that. More so feed stores. Find a feed store, preferably a small business, and buy a burlap sack. Or you might be able to get some burlap at a toy store, or excuse me, a fabric store. Just burlap. Tie one end, tie the other end. Your dog will like that tug toy more than any tug toy you buy from any of those dog toy companies. Burlap. I say burlap because it's a strong material that would hold up. But I don't know. I guess you could go to the fabric store and buy it, look through the material and find something. You could buy fleece, and sometimes you braid the fleece, it works. Point being, all those millions of dollars that humans spend on dog toys scam. I'll probably never get a dog toy endorsement, but it is. It's an absolute scam. Now, it makes it convenient for us because some of us don't want to go making toys for our dog. But more so, what my point is, it's geared towards us. And, you know, they make them so they rip up. They're not going to make an indestructible toy. Come on, think about it. Are they really going to make indestructible things? Then you don't buy anymore. They want them to get destroyed, so you continue to buy them. It's a racket, you guys. It's a scam. All right. So anyway, dogs don't care about any of that stuff. They like toys, don't get me wrong, but what I'm saying is you could make a toy. Get a cardboard box, crumple up some paper, put some kibble in the paper, throw it in that box. That they'll play with that for a while. You know, dogs don't play with anything for that long anyway, unless you play with them. And they would rather play with you anyway. So, you know, if you were playing, you know, hide and seek and tag, you're it, and running and doing some like wrestling with them and roughhousing, they'd much rather do that than any toy anyway. So yeah, they're not totally non-materialistic. Everything that we buy above food, medical care, they don't care about that. They don't even want that stuff. So when people say pets are expensive, you know what? Yes and no. Maybe more so no, because well, a lot of the stuff that you guys buy for them, they don't need anyway. You're buying that because you want to buy it, or you think you're supposed to buy it. All right. So they are completely non-materialistic. Can't say that about humans. Humans are very materialistic. Very much so. You know, even your kids, again, going back to kids, when you have kids, you know, they want specific toys. Now, in their defense, it's because they see the things advertising on TV or because their friends have them. You know, I imagine if you lived like a little house on the prairie type of life, off the grid, and were away from all the influences of social media, TV, or mainstream media, kids probably wouldn't be that way. But alas, they are, because we are inundated with all that stuff all the time. So yeah, you know, humans tend to be materialistic because of what is presented to us from a very young age until we, you know, grow older. And that is why we want the certain type of cars and a certain type of houses and a certain type of computer and a certain type of cell phone. We want those things because we are bombarded with it from the beginning. Dogs don't have to worry about all that. All right, so they're very non-materialistic. Now, here's one of my favorite ones. Dogs do not have any ego. None. They're not trying to be the best of us. And I'm talking about, again, within a relationship. Now, certainly, dogs compete against each other, for status. That is not what I'm talking about right now. I'm talking about the human-dog relationship. So let's definitely stick on that. But with their person, they're never going to try to outdo you. They don't even know what that means. What does that even mean? They don't have any ego. They're not trying to be the best. They're just trying to be. They're trying to exist. They're trying to survive. That's that animal instinct that they have. Anytime an animal is competing, might be for food. But again, our domesticated dogs don't have to compete for food. We're giving it to them freely. So there's no ego. You know what's something along this line? we as humans were perpetuate our ego onto our dogs. Like one of the most interesting things I will see a lot of, back to those working dogs and working breeds. A lot of times I hear some of the handlers who have them, and I'm going to go there and say it's primarily male handlers. I'm going to go ahead and say that. They say, this is a serious dog. What does that even mean? There's no such thing as a serious dog. You heard it from me. There is no such thing as a serious dog. What does a dog have to be serious about? Now, if they're talking about intensity, that does not equate serious. That is just intensity, which is part of their drive, which is part of their instinct, what is bred into them. But it doesn't have anything to do with seriousness, because you know what? It's still all play. Those serious dogs, quote unquote, they're playing. They're just very intense about their play. So I would argue that it is not serious. It is silly. Let me give you an example. Have you ever seen any type of the bully breeds hanging on, like it'll be a toy attached to a rope, dangling, suspended high off the ground, and whatever insert bully breed is clamped onto that rope and just hanging there? Have you ever seen that? Have you ever looked at how ridiculous that is? So I would venture to say that's not a serious dog hanging, just dangling, feet dangling, grabbing onto that for not hours, but for a long period of time. First of all, is that smart? I don't know. But it's quite silly, quite ridiculous. What is the point in that? So if it was a serious dog, why would they do that? Just hanging though, just hanging. Looking quite ridiculous. I mean, cute, funny, haha, all that. But it is not serious. And that is one of the things that people would say, oh, it's a serious dog because he's hanging, dangling for no reason. Hanging onto a toy that's not going anywhere. Mm-mm. The dogs that do protection sports and bite work, that's all play. It's all play to them. They are trained from babies to grab onto that toy, the sleeve, the bite suit, whatever. And that is play. They're having the time of their lives. So forget that noise about seriousness. And the ego that is attached to dogs like that is all the humans. Hey, I compete in dog sports with my dogs. It's my ego that is doing that. They couldn't care less. I've always said that every dog I've had that has done quite well in competitive dog sports would just as soon be laying on the couch next to me as much as they would do the sport. They don't care what activity we're doing. They just want to do it with me. What you got? What you got, Mom? What do you want to do today? Let's go. Doesn't matter. Play ball in the backyard. Lay next to me on the couch while I watch TV. Go do an obedience or agility trial. Doesn't matter. So, again, no ego in dogs. You never have to worry about them trying to one up. You never have to worry about them doing things to be the best, to be better. That quote unquote, you know, that intensity that dogs have is just for play. They're intense at playing, we'll say. There's that. Hi, here's our favorite one. Number 6. They love us unconditionally. Now, we all say that about dogs. We all mean it when we say it. But what exactly do we mean? What does that mean? What does love us unconditionally mean? Now, what I don't want people to misconstrue this to mean is that if you don't provide for a dog's basic needs, they're going to stay with you anyway. Because I actually think, and I've never put this experiment to a test, but here's my experiment. Tell me what you think about this experiment. If there was house A and house B, so, and you lived in house A with your dog, who you loved, who you may have had for years. I don't know. You have a relationship with them. Someone moves in right next door to house B, or maybe not even a whole house away. Like maybe like literally there was just a, they were tents, let's say one tent and the other tent. If you stopped feeding and giving your dog water, just cold turkey stop. But the person in tent B had fresh water and food and treats for your dog out to have, to feed them. You didn't take care of their basic needs. And the one next to you did. Let's go even further. So I said there was two tents because shelter is also a need. Let's say you did not even have a tent. You were just sitting there, no tent, no food, no water. You had your dog, and the person in B had a tent with a fire going for warmth and had food and water. Do you think your dog would stay with you? I just realized that would be a totally unrealistic experiment, but it's still a good experiment in your mind. Do you think your dog, because that to me, if truly you said unconditional love, that's what it would be. You don't provide anything for your dog and they're going to stay with you anyway. Like you don't even provide the basic needs. They're going to stay with you versus someone right there who does. I don't know about that. Like I said, we're never going to be able to put that experiment to test. But think about it. I fully think the dog would go to person B and start hanging out with them, especially if person B gave them affection. Because that is a need too. Now, if they didn't give them affection and only you who was sitting out in the rain and cold with no food and water was giving them affection, they'd probably come back and visit you, but they're going to go back to where their needs are being met. That's a smart animal that does that because you don't want to stay where you can't survive, right? So anyway, I don't think that's what unconditional love means. All right. Technically, yeah, but that's not what it means. What it means more is if you are providing a dog's basic needs and you are their person, they don't really judge you. Like, they don't judge you. Like, if you yell and if you're mean to them sometimes, which is something that we hope that we all avoid doing. But if you do, you make mistakes, as we all do in relationships. You have a bad day. Some days you might ignore them or whatever. They're still going to love you. They're going to hang in there. They're going to hang in there, which also comes back to the loyalty. So I do think they love us unconditionally. They don't care who we are. A poor man's dog will be as loyal and loving to him as a rich man's dog. It doesn't matter what you do for a living. It doesn't matter anything about you, as long as you do provide their basic needs. So I want to be clear about that. I do feel that an animal, because of their will to survive, you have to at least provide their basic needs in order for them to love you unconditionally and stay with you. All right. Here's one of my favorite ones about dogs. They do not take life very seriously. Remember I talked about the dog dangling from the suspended toy? Same thing. All dogs are very silly, really, when it comes down to it. They don't look at life seriously. They roll with the punches, so to speak. You know, I can't remember exactly the wording of a saying, but you should like be more like a dog. When problems come up, kick some dirt over it and keep it moving, right? That's the way dogs are. Kick some dirt on it and keep it moving. Move on. Now, dogs do hold grudges. I'm going to say that. Things do bother dogs more so with each other Not with humans, but with each other. Dogs don't forget. Like, if they get into a fight with another dog, they're going to remember it. So, there's that. But again, I'm talking more about the human-to-dog relationship and the dog-to-their-person relationship. So, they don't take life too seriously. They're silly. They're whimsical. They like to have fun. So, yeah. That's a great quality to have. Because let me tell you, humans agonize over everything. Now, in our defense, we have a lot to agonize over. Bills got to be paid. Work, we got to find work. You know, got to pay rent. There's a lot. There's a lot that we have to worry about. Luckily, dogs are not bothered by any of that stuff. And hence, they get to be, like, not take things seriously. They do not understand where the food comes from that we feed them and what we had to go through to get it. They don't understand that. They don't care about any of that. They don't concern themselves with that. They don't have that cognitive ability. And you know what? Good for them, because that's a terrible thing that we have as humans, that we have to worry about everything. All right. Dogs are forgiving. They're not vengeful. You know, like I said, if you make a mistake with your dog, and those of us who do training, we make a lot of mistakes with our dogs. We do. Like when I think back to my early dogs, the mistakes I made, they were pretty significant. They were pretty significant.
This is Laurie C. Williams, the Canine Diva. Thank you so much for joining us today on Just a Dog Trainer podcast. See you next time.